Hi, welcome back to the new Voice Study Break. I'm your host, Jade Sewell.
And I'm Andrewline Schmelzer.
Today, we'll be talking about an Earth Day reflection, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey's trip to the hilltop for recess, and also, you're not going to believe what this Central Illinois man bowled with. All right, so according to climateclock.world, we only have 6 years, 252 days, 11 hours, 18 minutes, and 5 seconds as of this very second until climate change is irreversible. Now, for that clock, what they go off of is feasible greenhouse emissions in order to limit global warming. So the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, began this report in 2018 when humans could release an additional 420 GT of carbon into the atmosphere and still have a 67% chance of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So this deadline shows how long we have until our carbon budget runs out, given the amount of carbon that we continue to emit globally. So if this amount doesn't stop, the likelihood of catastrophic climate change in the future is incredibly likely. Again, because of these insane amounts of carbon emissions that we are emitting globally, it's getting scary. All right, Angeline, what?
Yeah, I don't know. So, like, what can we do to help so that this number is not the way that it is? Because just seeing it was like, okay, we have to achieve zero emissions in just over 6 years. Like, how is that feasible? Can we do that, do you think?
This sounds negative. Unfortunately, I don't think there's anything that we can do as individual people to cut this down. I mean, I think I saw some crazy statistic that's like, even if everyone like went vegetarian, like everyone on Earth went vegetarian, it wouldn't make a significant difference in conservation. Again, because considering that it takes a lot to maintain cattle, and deforestation contributes a lot to that to allow access to farmland for cattle, and then also that the urine in horses and cattle, what have you, contributes to climate change. So considering that, if everyone went vegetarian, we had no need for these animals anymore, and somehow they all, like, just disappeared. Again, they wouldn't do anything because corporations are our largest polluters. In that sense, there's only a few things we can do. One of the biggest industries that we contribute to is the fast fashion industry. So that means that we need to cut down or make more ethical choices or put in more ethical standards in place to eliminate fast fashion. Because even bigger products like Nike benefit from fast fashion and benefit from basically slave labor, which is another significant problem, although not the one that we're talking about right now with global warming. So in order to make one shirt, it's insane. There is 700 gallons of water required to make one cotton shirt.
Wow.
And it takes 80 years for that cotton shirt to break down in landfills. Also consider that the fashion industry produces 10% of our carbon emissions globally. And again, most clothes, something crazy like 80% of clothing ends up, 85% of textiles go into landfills each year, which right here says is enough to fill the Sydney Harbor annually. And then washing clothes also releases 500,000 tons of microfibers into the ocean every year, which is the equivalent of 50 billion plastic bottles. And those microfibers are kind of invisible to the naked eye. And not only do they harm wildlife, but also in the communities that make these shirts, they are polluting the water systems. So in factories like India and Indonesia and China, where these companies benefit the most from cheap labor, those water systems are being continuously polluted by fast fashion and polyfibers. It's absolutely terrifying.
Yeah, that's just crazy. It's also like, why do we need all these clothes? Don't get me wrong. I love having the variety and the choices. But there are so many clothes when you go into, like, retail stores. And it's like, what's happening here?
No, and I absolutely agree. I think, so, like, the most ethical thing we can do is, like, one thing that's been a large push recently, thrifting clothing. That's one thing you can do, you know, instead of contributing to it by, like, supplying the demand for these fast fashion items or buying from brands like Forever 21 that benefit from fast fashion. You thrift your clothing. You buy clothing at garage sales. You even making your own clothing is even something that's possible. I mean, I know not everyone has the time, but also like there are a lot of like local seamstresses, and there's also a lot of local small businesses who make their own clothing, and you not only help them by paying for their products, but you're also contributing or I guess cutting down on the fast fashion industry and cutting down on the pollution that's happening globally. So those are all like options, supporting small businesses and cutting down on your consumption of fast fashion, definitely doable things. Or even just demanding that these companies use more ethical labor and of course really put sanctions on them for what they can and cannot produce or how much they can emit globally of these microfibers, of these polymers. I guess it's really like the biggest thing that we can do right now, again, because it's largely a corporate thing. It's not even like everyday Americans that are, or everyday people globally that are contributing to this pollution. It is such a corporate issue, and corporations can't go unchecked like this anymore if we want to see our future survive.
Yeah, yeah. You hear that, corporations? Get it together.
And I think also one thing that kind of frustrates me personally is I just don't think people take this issue seriously enough, because I think it's so easy to push it off. Like, well, it's never going to happen in my lifetime, you know? I won't see the, like, I won't reap the fruits of my labor here because I'll be dead by the time it gets bad. But I mean, also, like, you can attest to the, like, bizarre weather patterns that we've had recently.
Right, yeah. And even though weather isn't necessarily the same thing as climate, weather is just like short-term conditions, whereas climate refers to long-term changes. Mm-hmm. However, how many times in recent years has it snowed in April versus, you know, way back in, I don't know all the statistics, mm-hmm. but maybe there's some sort of long-term condition there, not just the one-time change, but I mean, even these crazy weather patterns, I mean, how many more tornadoes are we having now than we have, you know, decades prior?
No, it definitely, these catastrophes are happening at an exponential rate, you know, they're catastrophic, and every year seems that they're getting worse. And again, like you said, like, we have rarely had snow in April. You know, and again, since that is just a weather pattern, but like consistent weather patterns definitely can show us climate. And again, mm-hmm. it's staying warmer longer into the year. And then all of a sudden we're seeing snow later into the year and record highs and record lows that are all over the place and weather patterns that don't seem to match seasonal expectations anymore. There's definitely something going on. And again, that's kind of what it talked about in this climate clock, is that we're going to continue to see these like extreme variants until all of a sudden, like, that's the new normal, where just catastrophe happens on a global scale because of our lack of carbon budget that we have.
Yeah, and I feel like being in the Midwest, we like to blame it on that. Like, oh, yeah, it's 70 in November. That's just, it's the Midwest. It'll last for one day, and then, you know, it'll be snowing next week.
Yeah, no, I definitely think we have a tendency to blame it on, but it's important to look at the larger issue at hand and recognize that something needs to be done. And I know it can feel like there's not a lot we can do here at the local level, but we can, you know, support the passage of bills that limit corporate functionality, or we can hold organizations accountable for being more eco-friendly. Again, it's not something that we can necessarily fix just one person, but if we can, like, unite our voices, I think that's something that's going to be really valuable and really important going forward, mm-hmm. that we demand and expect that our clothing be eco-friendly, and that also, again, it uses ethical labor.
Yeah.
And, Angeline, I know that you had a story that I think is really telling about just how much one person caring can do.
Yeah, so in honor of Earth Day, it just, a memory comes to me from my small childhood, which at some points seems like forever ago, but I believe I was in kindergarten at the time, and our class received little evergreen trees, and baby evergreen trees come very much like just big sticks. So some people were much more interested in their little trees than some people. And I was very fascinated by this little tree. So I was so excited to get home, and my parents planted it with me, and it was so great. And it's still thriving to this day. It's been, let's see, I am math years. Hold on, pause it. Let me figure it out. It's been 16 years.
Oh, goodness, that's quite a long time.
And it is huge now. It's way taller than me. I can't tell you how many feet. Probably, I don't know, 10, 12.
That's insane.
It's so big, and it's so cute. It's still not tall enough to grow regular-sized pine cones that you might be used to on the, like, big adult trees, but it has these little baby pine cones, and it's so adorable, and whenever I look at it, it reminds me of that, and it's just one small thing that one person can do that not only can help the planet, but it also helps brighten the street, I guess.
No, I agree. Again, it's just doing the small things that you can in order to make a difference, because again, like, one person alone can't do anything, but if we all, like, take that collective choice to, like, plant a tree, to petition the government to make sure that things are in order, like, as a group, we can do so much. And I think we've seen that a lot this year in various situations, globally and locally. And I agree. I think it only just takes one person to make that change, to start doing something in order to make that larger difference. So this past weekend, Bradley hosted Recess, which in the past is traditionally a musical act. So again, this is a concert usually where we have like B or C list bands, those one hit wonders, washed up childhood actors. Again, in the past, we've had like Jesse McCartney, T-Pain, Walk the Moon, just in my time at Bradley. I think they used to be able to afford bigger acts, but I think...
Well, our freshman year is when they first started the quote-unquote Recess, which was, yeah, it was Jesse McCartney, Andy Grammer, and T-Pain. And then last year, they announced Walk the Moon, but and then a pandemic happened, and I don't think anything happened.
No, I don't think so either. But yeah, no, so again... That's the kind of vibe that we usually get there. This year, though, they decided to host a comedy duo. I guess I can't really say that because it's more of a Q&A, but Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, which was exciting.
Yeah, definitely. When the announcement came up, I was really excited. I love both of their work in Saturday Night Live. I love Parks and Rec, so Amy Poehler is one of my comedic idols when it comes to that, and... You know, the various films that I've watched with Tina Fey. I've even seen Tina Fey in a little bit more serious work in Modern Love, I believe, on Amazon Prime, which she was still funny, but still had it had serious moments as well. So, yeah, they're definitely, in my mind at least, A-list actors and comedians and probably two of the most famous people that Bradley has been able to come up with on campus, or ACBU. Although, kind of in line with that, I think at the beginning of this academic year, I think it was then, I don't know, time blurs, but we had Tiffany Haddish also appear virtually at one point, so maybe this comedy thing is something that Bradley is really leaning into, which, hey, I'm cool with. I had my laughs. It was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah, no, I do think that with the global pandemic and virtual things, we've been able to host musical, like AJR, for instance, and celebrity, like you said, comedy acts that we wouldn't have been able to previously. I know they also had a former Bachelor contestant do a Q&A at one point, which was exciting. I tuned into that because I'm a big fan of The Bachelor. But, yeah, no, I do think they're trying to lean into comedy, which is appropriate because you can't really go wrong with comedy, whereas everyone has their own musical tastes. The one thing I will say, though, that I was a little disappointed by is that I think that the Recess was misrepresented. Because, again, given that it's usually a musical act, I was under the impression that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler would be doing comedy. And I think while, like, the Q&A was funny, I don't think I walked into it knowing it was going to be exclusively a Q&A. I thought they'd do a set.
Yeah, I mean, I was secretly hoping for that, although this was kind of something that I had going in my mind that this is how it was going to be, because it was advertised as a conversation with, not mm-hmm. necessarily a skit by.
Yeah.
Which, although, when I see these two people on a poster together, I assume that they're going to, you know, banter, maybe have something prepared, something, even though it said conversation with. I was like, okay, well, maybe, you know, they'll come with some super secret skit that's special to Bradley. I don't know. They met in the Midwest. They could have easily done some a Midwest stand-up or something. Very easy to do.
Yeah, I think the problem with doing a Q&A, even with famous people, though, is that some people aren't going to understand who they are or have quite the knowledge base for that. So, again, I think you kind of isolate some students when you have a comedy duo who's not performing comedy. Because, again, if you're not, like, someone who actively follows these celebrities, because, I mean, they're people who don't, you're not going to appreciate the, like, minutiae about the behind-the-scenes stuff they gave us about SNL. Like, they talked about how they used to do bagels before the, gosh, what is the report? The Weekend Report. They used to have a little bagel thing before the Weekend Report, and they talked about, like, their, like, genealogy, and they found out stuff about each other that they hadn't previously known. And again, though, like, I don't think you're going to appreciate that unless you're kind of a fan of their work. And, like I said, you and I are both fans, so it was a good time. There were some funny moments. But again, I think there were some people in the quad who were like, I don't quite know who these people are. I don't really appreciate any of these questions. And one thing that we've kind of discussed is that there wasn't really a way for people on the quad to ask questions unless you had the link. And again, right. I didn't go into it, like, requesting a link, and I didn't really know where to find a link. So I wasn't able to ask any questions. I was kind of, like, passively watching.
Right. So we had no idea what was going on in the chat. We've heard from other people that there was something about geese, which I think would have been kind of funny to follow. Which I don't believe they answered anything about geese. They answered questions about cheese and donuts and colors.
And waffles, And waffles. Apparently Amy Poehler doesn't actually like waffles.
Yeah, that was surprising.
Shocked. I don't know why that was surprising. Hurt me, but it did hurt me
a little bit. I was like, what? Your character loves waffles so much that didn't, like, come from you in any way? But, hey, everyone has their own favorite breakfast food, I guess. I guess they just wanted Amy Poehler to be like Leslie Knope and like waffles. But that was just a me. It was like a debunking, not necessarily childhood. I didn't get into Parks and Rec until a few years ago. But just one of the things in my mind that was like, oh, okay. That and what Tina Fey is distantly related to Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, that one.
That was also a surprise. They were trying to do the degrees of Kevin Bacon, and Tina Fey was just like zero because I'm kind of related. So that was a cool story.
That was, yeah. No, I appreciated that too. And again, I think it was interesting to hear them shed light on their Midwestern experience as a Midwestern town. Overall, it was fun. I wish there was a few things that were different, but overall, like you said, I wasn't disappointed. I had a lot of fun, and I hope everyone else was able to appreciate it, too.
Yeah, I have fun. I appreciate it that this is something unique and special to Bradley. This isn't like it was a Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel interview. It was just us. It was good.
So yesterday, I saw a tweet with 100,000 likes about a man bowling a perfect game. And at first I was like, well, this is really cool. But what I found out was even cooler was this man is from Central Illinois and Peoria, no less. Angeline, do you want to kind of break down this story for us?
Yeah, so it's really cool. This guy, his name is John Hinkle from, he used to play college bowling at Western Illinois University. Oh. And even won the Intercollegiate Bowling Championship in 2002. But this 300 game was very special to him since his father had something to do with it. He was able to put his father's ashes into the thumb hole of the bowling ball. And it was very special to him because his father was the one that introduced him to bowling. And so, and his father never got that 300 game, got really, really close, bowled a 299 once, but never got to that 300 game. So when John Hinkle did it, he was happy that his father had something to do with it. And the reason why he could have his ashes in the, I think it was the thumb hole, is because another crazy thing, he bowls with two hands.
Hmm.
Not many professional players that I know of bowl with two hands. Yeah. That's something that I do because I am a terrible bowler. But, yeah, and he was able to do that, and it was really fast. So, yeah, bowl 300 while bowling with two hands, and also with his father's ashes in the ball. And he also said that he had a little bit of trouble finding someone to do it, which, I mean, I guess that's a specialty kind of item, you know, you hear about urns, necklaces, jewelry and stuff.
Never bowling
you
balls.
You don't really hear about bowling balls all too much. So it is a very interesting, nice human interest story. I was happy to come across this and see that, especially with some memories that I have of bowling. Might not know this about me, but I was in a bowling league when I was a kid.
Pro bowler, Angeline?
I wouldn't call it pro, but I don't know how old I was, maybe 7, 8. I did it with my brother. We were a sibling duo team. We became okay. Not gonna say we were great, but we were good. I got my fair share of spares and strikes then. I can't bowl like that anymore. Definitely lost my practice.
I don't think I've ever bowled a game over 90, if I'm honest.
I can't remember. I maybe did then, but definitely not now. The funny story is I'm glad I didn't have ashes in that bowling ball because I broke it. So
you broke a bowling ball?
While bowling.
How?
Well, you know, when you get to a certain age, you throw a little bit stronger than a 6-pound bowling ball.
Oh.
Maybe isn't the way to go. And again, I said that I bowled with two hands, which I did. So it was less bowling and more throwing.
I've had a story like that, actually. So it was literally like probably last year or 2 years ago because before COVID. But I was bowling and I like to think I'm strong because of cheerleading, but I'm kind of a wimp when it comes to bowling. But so I always get the like lighter balls that are for kids, and my fingers are kind of like too fat for the holes. So I'll like bowl with them, and sometimes like my fingers will get stuck. And so on this one particular day, I was at Roxy's in Pekin, and I go to bowl, and I like swing back and swing forward, and the bowling ball gets stuck on my fingers. So it follows like, not like it doesn't leave my hand where a normal bowling ball would. It leaves probably where you'd throw a softball. So my softball pitched bowling ball bounces, bam, into my lane, bounces into the next lane, bam, and then bounces into a third lane before going into the gutter. And I felt so bad. Luckily, the people in that lane found it hilarious. And I just apologized profusely. I was mortified. So I guess neither of us are pretty good bowlers. But again, it's really wholesome to hear the story of this man who was able to share this win, in a sense, with his father, you know?
Yes, it was very special, especially when you lose someone that close and you want to continue something in honor of them. It's really nice that he had that moment and it was special to him, yes.
Yeah, it's like a better Big Lebowski story. No. Thank you again for tuning into Study Break, the voice podcast. This marks our last podcast of the regular season, although we will be doing a special summer edition podcast as well. We look forward to seeing you then. Have a great finals break.